If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're gonna get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Houser to the sideline, picked off. Mike Sabre still. He's got room to run down the sideline. Sabre still gonna take it all the way. Touchdown, Michigan.
Mike Sanristil, the second of Washington's 3 second-round picks on Friday night, a pick that got Nick Saban so fired up. Listen to Nick Saban Friday night on ESPN after Washington picked the Michigan corner.
There's a difference between love and loves. I loves this guy. I mean, this guy may be the best football player, pound for pound, in the draft. I mean, he's instinctive, he's physical, and I know he's not very big. All right, but I'm going to tell you what, this guy makes plays, he can cover, he can tackle, he's tough, fast reactor. I just love the way this guy plays. I mean, I just love it. Good blitzer.
Yeah.
Killed us in our game blitzing. I mean, just killed us coming off the edge as a star. He's a star.
Best pound-for-pound player in the draft. That's an evaluation worth listening to. Not because it was great, but because it came from Nick Saban, one of the greatest to ever do it. Losing his mind over a player Washington picked on Friday night. No offense to RAS scores or internet mock drafters. That right there is pretty much the only evaluation and projection you need. Of course, unless Nick Ackridge from Pro Football Focus is on the show, which he is, and he's coming up in the next segment. I really like Nick. Nick's a senior data analyst for PFF, and he's a huge Washington fan, a Northern Virginia guy. We've had him on the show a bunch in recent years. We'll see what he and PFF think of not only the draft, but maybe some of the undrafted free agents the team signed as well. The show, as always, is presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name for a free in-home, no-obligation estimate. The Capitals didn't last long, swept out of the NHL playoffs by the Rangers last night. Would have loved to have seen another game or two, but when you score 7 goals in 4 games, it's going to be hard to win a game. Unless, of course, I guess you get all 7 of those goals in just one of the games. But that did not happen. 4-2 the final in Game 4 last night at Capital One. The Rangers were obviously the better team. The Caps really hurt themselves during the series, though, with penalties. The Rangers had 6 power play goals in just 4 games, and they had a power play percentage of 37.5%. Last night, it was TJ Oshie's penalty in the third period with the game tied at 2, which really was the killer. Special teams overall brutal for the Caps in this series. Gave up 2 shorthanded goals in addition to the 6 power play goals, and they themselves only scored twice with the extra man advantage. So hockey over for most of us. You know, one of the things I've realized over the years is that in this DMV, there are Caps fans, just not a lot of hockey fans. I don't anticipate a huge demand for us to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, even though they are great to watch. They're intense, but there just aren't many hardcore NHL fans among us. There are some, But I think, you know, someone like me and others in the market who have been doing sports media, sports content for as long as some of us have been doing it, you kind of understand the landscape this time of year. Like, if the Caps have a good team, they're in the postseason, and there are high expectations, that bandwagon gets crowded, and the conversation about them really heats up, and it's worth doing. But the appetite for the sport without the Caps in it, it's not the NFL. It's not even the NBA or Major League Baseball. There just is zero actual interest in discussing or post-gaming Canucks Predators, you know, or Jets Avalanche. Anyway, the NFL draft. So I did not do a show over the weekend as I promised on Friday. Simply put, I had no voice by the time I got to Saturday. I had a cold last week. It was allergies, cold. I don't know what it was. I think some of you could hear it in my voice at the end of last week. And then we did a draft show on radio Friday night. And by the time Saturday rolled around, I just had no voice left. So I bailed on that. So today's show really is going to be about the remainder of the draft after Jaden Daniels in the first round. The draft that many of us hope is, you know, the foundation draft to eventually a championship contender. You know, let this 2024 draft be the equivalent of what 1981 was. 12 players that year, 1981 drafted. Six major contributors and or starters on their first Super Bowl team in 82 and then future Super Bowls as well. Mark May, Russ Grimm were the first two players selected in that draft. Washington did not have a second-round pick. Grimm was a third-round pick. May was a first-round pick, both from the University of Pittsburgh. Then it was Dexter in the fifth round. Charlie Brown, the receiver, who was a big part of the 82 Super Bowl team in the eighth round. Darryl Grant in the ninth. Of course, Darryl Grant with one of the most famous plays in franchise history, getting the deflected Dexter pass of Gary Hogaboom and returning it into the end zone for a touchdown in the NFC Championship game. And then Clint Didier was picked in the 12th round that year out of Portland State. Now, he was not a significant contributor on that 82 playoff run, team that had the run, but in future playoff seasons, specifically 1987, two touchdowns in that postseason. He had one at Soldier Field. That was the game, by the way, where Darryl Green had the punt return for a touchdown. And then he had the last of the onslaught of touchdowns in Super Bowl 22 against Denver. The 35 points in 18 plays. The last touchdown in that quarter was a touchdown pass from Doug Williams to Clint Didier. How nice it would be if, you know, years down the road, we looked back at 2024 in the same way. Of course, you know, let's be real. They drafted nine players, but the career of one player in particular will be talked about more than any other. You know, the spotlight of the Skins 2024 draft is on Jaden Daniels. But man, did you guys see, read, hear the accolades for the job Adam Peters and company did over the weekend? I mean, people are gushing. The average grade out there from those that grade the draft, basically like an A. The RAS score, I'm sure some of you saw this, the relative athletic score, number one in the NFL. The NGS number, the next gen numbers, solid, top, you know, quarter of the NFL. What a draft, people say. Here are a few people. I got some really, really good tweets, emails. I'm going to read a few of them here. This from Leonard. Sheehan, best we've drafted in years. Adam Peters should just take a bow and say, you're welcome. From Sellers, the RAS score was the highest in the NFL! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Peters had a plan. First time we've said that about an offseason. From Jackson, Kevin, validating weekend. This franchise is in a completely different place. I do agree with that. I can't believe we finally drafted like an NFL team. And then this one from Rep. Rep wrote, I haven't been this optimistic about one person in the organization since Joe Gibbs left in 2007. Adam Peters is a star. We have a combination of Howie Roseman and Ozzie Newsome leading our franchise. Wow. I mean, high praise from Oscar. Just a couple of words in all caps. Kev, now that's how you do it. Exclamation point. Hashtag Commanders Draft. So let me just preface what I'm going to say with, I like Adam Peters too. I think he's a smart dude. I think it's going to work out. That's my hunch right now. But I am not ready to hand Adam Peters the 2024 General Manager of the Year award before they've actually played a game yet. But I am optimistic about the things that they are doing, the people that they've got in the organization. I think, look, the number one reason for optimism is that it's not Dan anymore. That's not going to change for a while. They have a lot to prove, the new people do. I mean, I am benefit of the doubt, Kev, but I am not going to be benefit of the doubt forever. I mean, there's going to be a time where they're going to have to perform. But the benefit of the doubt really stems from no Dan. Grading a draft, I think I do this, every single year after the draft. And trust me, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, because the draft is a high interest period of the year for people like me. And I appreciate that. And I get into, looking at these players and coming up with, opinions on players. I mean, this year's a little bit different because it was so focused on quarterback. It was also different because we've got a whole new regime and we didn't know how they would handle it and et cetera. But grading a draft when it's over, I mean, I know I've said this pretty much every year. Maybe even when I've given a grade. It's a ridiculous endeavor. I mean, it's stupid. Now, I'm not saying that if your, grade is based on like a certain criteria that you believe in, something like the value of the position in which the players were selected. There does tend to be kind of a consensus of mock drafts on what round a player should be taken in. So, Warren Sharp, who we've had on the show before, Warren Sharp has something he uses. It's called draft capital over expectation. It identifies the picks that were value picks versus those that were reaches based on, again, some sort of average mock draft ranking of the players, prior to the draft beginning. So, a player like the one Washington took in the second round, and we will be talking about Johnny Newton. But Johnny Newton was mocked in a lot of first rounds of this past draft. And Washington got him early in the second round. So if you're evaluating the draft based on Washington getting value versus reaching for too many players, that's fine. But it doesn't mean anything in terms of what the player will become. I mean, we have hammered this home for years, but the teams themselves only get it right like 37-38% of the time. And when they get it to 40% of the time, 3 years after a draft, I mean, they are given a parade. That's like a massively positive hit rate. I mean, there's no way today for any of us to know if Washington got it right in the 2024 draft. I'm going to go through some thoughts on some of these players because that's what we always do this time of year. But there's no way I can possibly get to where Leonard got to when he said, the best we've drafted in years. Adam Peters should just take a bow and say, you're welcome. Or reps suggesting that Howie Roseman and Ozzie Newsome are rolled into Adam Peters' body. It'd be a hell of a combination. We will certainly take that. I mean, Adam Peters seems like a really good guy. I think he seems like a smart guy. By the way, you're going to hear he had a very long answer on Friday night to the five players they selected in the second and third round. And it's a pretty good breakdown of all of the players from the general manager. I'm going to play that for you here in the opening segment. But the grades, I mean, people have been crowning, you know, his first draft in Washington as A-level. CBS Sports, A+. Sports Illustrated, A+. The Ringer, A. PFF, A. Sporting News, A. Mel Kiper, A-. NFL.com, A-. USA Today, A-. The worst grade I found was a B-. That was the worst grade I found. It came from Mark Maskey at the Washington Post. I mean, really impressive grades. But they are just guesses. Because I went back and pulled up all of the grades from Washington's esteemed 2020 class. You remember the 2020 Washington football team draft? Nobody's on the team anymore from that draft 4 years later. Yet, right after that draft, in April or early May of 2020, now, that draft was the COVID draft. However, NFL.com, A-. USA Today, A-. Sports Illustrated, B+. Yahoo, B+. CBS Sports, B+. PFF, B. Kiper did have a C+. That was the worst of the grades from the bigger name evaluators. But again, like, not one player left. I mean, they got some decent performances from some of the players in the 2020 draft. Antonio Gibson, Cameron Curl, but none of those players are on the team. You know, the 2021 draft was graded out as an A+ by DraftWire, A- by PFF, A- by NBC Sports, B+ by The Ringer, B+ by the by NFL.com. And, you know, Jamin Davis not looking great as the first round pick. Sam Cosmi looks good. You know, St. Juice, De'Ami Brown, Derek Forrest, they played a bunch of games, but the grade today, 3 years after that draft, would be much different. If I went back, by the way, I was thinking about this morning on radio, if I went back and pulled the reaction to the 2022 draft, which I did not do from a grading standpoint, but if I just pulled some of the emails and tweets that I got, I would find dozens, hundreds, talking about how the trade with the Saints was just a new way of doing business. It was a great trade back from 11 to 16. It'll go down as one of the great draft day trades. Dotson they got. They got Robinson Jr., Cole Turner, Sam Howell, and the Saints, the dumb Saints, they moved up for Chris Olave. Ha, ha, ha. LOL. I think most of you know what I'm talking about. This is not something that is new to the majority of you. Most of you understand what this weekend is in the moment. It is fun to watch on television. It's a great television show. I mean, I've always loved watching Mel Kiper and his thoughts on the draft. I mean, this guy basically made the draft what it is today. I mean, he's probably the single biggest reason the draft has become what it is today. The guys on the NFL Network, some of them are really smart. Some of them are excellent communicators. And you know they've done a lot of studying and a lot of research. You know, Daniel Jeremiah as an example. There are few of them out there that have studied it all year long. And it's entertaining. I like that aspect of it. And it's a couple of days to kind of play fantasy. It's a you know, fantasizing about what may be down the road. But the reality is it's just 3 days in April of entertainment that can't be reasonably judged until 3 years later. It doesn't lessen the importance of it. Trust me. I get it. This is the best chance for organizations in that business, the NFL, to create the foundation, the backbone of an eventual winner, a future contender. But whether you are you know, Kuiper or Jeremiah or Lewis Riddick, or you're just one of the people that sent me one of those emails where Adam Peters from Leonard can just take a bow and say you're welcome. Nobody can take a bow today. My opinions on drafts prior to and then afterwards are often afterwards driven by did they overdraft or get great value on a player based on, you know, the consensus of sort of mock drafts, which, you know, we've only in the last couple of years kind of gotten a lot of the players in the identified rounds to be more consistent. And I think it's more consistent with teams as well. I personally, though, for me, it's about watching a ton of college football. I mean, I love college football. I watch as much, if not more, college football than I do the NFL. I love the NFL, but I've always told you guys, Saturdays to me are better days during the fall than Sundays. Sundays are awesome too. Love Sundays, but I like Saturdays more. And that's always going to be my go-to, you know, watching games and watching these players. You know, the combine, the Senior Bowl, the pro days, all of the, you know, referred to as, you know, advanced analytics, you know, the information on players. It's all interesting, but typically for me, nothing convinces me like how they played in games with kind of the context of, you know, game situation, game importance, score, clock, etc. So with that, let me get to a couple of thoughts overall on what Washington did in the draft. First of all, you know I love Jaden Daniels, and we did that on Friday's show. Jaden Daniels was my guy at quarterback from the jump. Who knows? I hope I'm right. I really hope I'm right because I want to be right, but it would really benefit Washington's team if Jaden Daniels ended up being the right pick. By the way, it's very possible that Drake May is going to be a great selection in New England as well. And maybe it's J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels. Two of the six are going to, I think, stick around. And then probably four of them will be on new teams, maybe for a song in 3 years. I loved the selection of Johnny Newton. I thought, first of all, it was a little bit after when most people had him projected to be taken. But that was a player I watched. He was recruited initially and committed initially to Maryland and then ended up at Illinois. And so I'm sure Lovie Smith had something to do with that. But Johnny Newton was one of those players that when you watched Illinois, Brett Bielema's team, and I watched a lot of Big Ten football, he was a monster. I mean, he was a pocket collapser. And great college. I have no idea how that translates at the NFL level. But, you know, Adam Peters has said, harder to evaluate quarterbacks than, say, pass rushers. Harder to evaluate quarterbacks than, like, D tackles. I think quarterbacks, offensive linemen, the positions we really don't understand are the hardest. But Johnny Newton was a force. We'll get the PFF perspective on Newton, you know, from Nick Ackridge. And I'll also play for you, as I mentioned, the thoughts from Adam Peters on the entire night, too. Mike Sanders still from Michigan, obviously the heart and soul of that Michigan defense that won the national championship. He is small. He is a slot corner. It's funny, when we were on the air Friday night, I said, I'm pretty sure in his first year he played offense. He did at Michigan. He is a guy that can do an awful lot. He really is one of those, like Emmanuel Forbes was. You know, he's undersized. Forbes isn't short. Sanders still is 5'9", you know, 5'8 and a half, 5'9". But he is instinctual. He anticipates. He breaks on balls. It's like he's got that sixth sense of what the quarterback's going to do when he's ahead of it. And then he is a fearless hitter. Love that about him. Big play guy, as Forbes was a year ago. Let's not forget that. Forbes still holds the record in college football for the most pick sixes ever. Look, Sanders still, Johnny Newton, Jaden Daniels, you know, you're looking at guys that definitely have those player traits that Peters and Quinn talked about when they were hired. They are fierce competitors. Ben Sinnott, the tight end from K-State. I mean, when they drafted him the other night, the first thing I thought of was this game on Thanksgiving weekend at the end of the year. It was an absolute blizzard in Manhattan, Kansas, in the Little Apple at K-State. And Sinnott was great. And he was just barreling over people in the snow in this blizzard game in Kansas at the end of the year. But a lot of you reached out and said, man, he looks and plays like Cooley. Yeah, the similarities are very much there. I mean, K-State's been one of those teams. They've just always been good, you know. They've just had great coaches, you know, over the years. And they had a good quarterback this year in Will Howard. He's actually he went into the portal, and he's going to be Ohio State's quarterback, the Buckeyes' quarterback next year. They didn't have much else offensively after Deuce Vaughn went last year in the draft to Dallas. But, you know, he is a versatile blocking tight end. I can read the profile to you. I'm sure you all have. From my memory, he's just a big, burling tight end. You know, he can block, he can catch, he's hard to bring down, which is another sort of trait that Peters and company look for. I mean, just think about Deebo Samuel and Kittle and all the guys in San Francisco that are impossible to tackle. This guy's hard to tackle, just like Cooley was. Now, Brandon Coleman, the first of the two third-round picks, have no idea about Brandon Coleman other than what I've read, and we'll again get the PFF perspective, and you'll hear what the general manager said. The first thing I thought of was, why are they drafting a guard here? And then I realized with the wingspan he had, I'm sure they're thinking tackle, and they are. He was the only offensive lineman picked in the draft. That's a problem for a lot of you. They went best player on their board. You know why? Because they've got a lot of needs. And they did try to trade back into the first round, and they just couldn't. For whatever reason, they couldn't do it. You have to have a willing trade partner to trade back into the first round. But whether it was Mims or Morgan, they were targeting, I'm sure, one of the two to get back into the first round. They weren't able to do it. So they ended up with one offensive lineman in the draft. And I know for a lot of you, that's a big issue. Maybe they think, well, let me just tell you, they absolutely think more of Andrew Wiley than most of you do. I don't know how they feel about Cornelius Lucas, but clearly they're comfortable with him because he's probably the week one starter at this point. Unless Trent Scott or somebody on the roster or Brandon Coleman emerges. Luke McCaffrey, the receiver from Rice, Christian McCaffrey's brother. I know that Rice was decent this year. They actually, a couple of the games they lost were tightly contested. They had nothing but Luke McCaffrey. Now, I'm not familiar. I did not see Rice play much at all. I know I wagered either against them or on them a few times. Probably had them in the smell test and didn't even know Luke McCaffrey was on the team. But I did watch a lot of tape, and that's a guy that's got some ability. And he's not small. You know, he's listed at 6'2". I don't know if he looks 6'2". He's not his father, obviously, Easy Ed, who was 6'5". But he just looks the part of one of those inside slot guys that are tough to cover. Really good hands, real good feel for space, at least based on, you know, the tape that I watched. The other three, McGee, Hampton, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I think you're looking at special teams. I know McGee is an athlete, and that he tested athletically very high, but you're looking really for guys that, you know, fifth round, seventh round. No, you end up with starters sometimes in the fifth round. I understand that. But, you know, out of the gate, think about all the linebackers, you know, that they have added. And McGee's another one. I mean, who knew when this offseason started that they would add Frankie Louvu, Bobby Wagner, Anthony Pittman, Michael Walker, and then add another in the draft. Lot of focus on linebacker. But, you know, athletic linebacking, certainly with Frankie Louvu and then the McGee kid from Temple. They added Sam Hartman, among others, in their undrafted free agent class. Hartman was really outstanding as a college quarterback, as a dual-threat college quarterback at Wake Forest. He just can't really throw the football at an NFL level. But, you know, Marcus Mariota is under contract for 1 year, and Jaden Daniels will have Marcus Mariota this year, and then they're going to be looking for the future backup to Jaden Daniels, and maybe they see Sam Hartman as a possibility. All right, I wanted you to hear what Adam Peters said. This was Friday night. It's a rather long answer, but he didn't have to take a lot of follow-ups because he basically addressed after Jaden Daniels, Newton, Sanristil, Sinnott, Coleman, McCaffrey. Here's what he said.
I can go through them here a little bit. I think just give you guys some bullet points. Starting with Johnny Newton. And Johnny, we could not believe he was still there. And we were a little nervous that he wasn't going to make it to us at 36. We looked at moving up to get him. Very surprising. We had a first round grade on him, and he is an explosive, violent player. He's a team captain. He got the commander tag, and he's exactly who we want to bring in this building. We think he's an advanced player. He can come in and play right away. Really a three down player. You can play on the rundowns, play on pass downs. Skilled, hands and feet are tied together, and he arrives violently when he gets the ball, and he plays just like we want him to play. So just thrilled to get Johnny, and that started off a really good night for us. Then moving to Mikey Sanristil, another captain, and another one where we were pretty nervous there, because as it was coming down to him, I mean, that's who we had our sights set on, and Mikey is a guy who's impressed myself for a really long time since he was a freshman, seeing him catch passes, and he transitioned to corner and playing nickel, and six interceptions last year, and was really the heart and soul of that Michigan team. I think anybody will even tell you. I know JJ had a big part in that too, but I think anybody will tell you Mikey, as much as anybody, was a team leader. And I think what sealed the deal with us is when we went to the pro day, and he was incredible doing the DB drills, and then he was the best one on offense doing the receiver drills. Outstanding route runner, outstanding ball skills, and he could just go all day. And the night before, we had dinner with him, and he was as impressive off the field as he was on the field. So we were thrilled to get him. He'll be a great nickel. And then you go to Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, and just really, you know, from my experience at the 49ers, learning from those guys and learning what they look for in tight ends with Coach Shanahan, Kyle, and everybody there, just seeing, and you know, it's a lofty comparison, and I'm not comparing him to the guys we had in San Francisco, but he reminds me of guys like Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle, the way he blocks and the way he moves and just the way he competes. And certainly not, you know, putting him in that, you know, those guys are all pros, pro bowlers, everything you'd want. But Ben has that same mindset, and he plays with that mindset. He can block really anywhere. You can put him in at the end of the line of scrimmage. You can block a DN. You can block a linebacker. You can block a defensive back in space. You'll block two people on the same play. If you saw that highlight, that was pretty cool. He can play fullback and block people on the second level. So he can do anything you want in the run game. And in the pass game, he's got great hands. Can get open. He can beat man coverage. And he's got that mindset when he gets the ball in his hands, he's not going down. So he's got everything we're looking for in a commander as well. Then getting to Brandon Coleman. Brandon Coleman's another team captain, and he really impressed us. We had him in here on a 30 visit, really, really loved his story. And he's got over 1,600 snaps at tackle. He also played guard. We see him as a tackle, and we think he could be a really good tackle. He's really experienced. He's got heavy hands. He's a really good athlete. So we were really fortunate to get him where we got him. And then last but not least, Luke McCaffrey, near and dear to my heart with the McCaffrey family. They're an incredible family. But it's a great way, you know, it's certainly a bonus when you draft somebody to know that. But Luke earned that. And Luke was a captain at Rice as well. He had took a road less traveled where he started off as a quarterback, and really taught himself how to be one of the best receivers in the country in the last 2 years. So he's got size, he's got speed, he's got great movement skills, and I think he's only going to ascend. And we're really, really excited to have him in the building, too. So exemplary players and really exemplary character with all those guys, and that's why we're so happy.
So that was a lot from Adam Peters, I understand, but I wanted you to hear kind of his summary of what they did with those five picks on night two of the draft. They ended up with six players in the first 100 that were selected in this draft. I thought there were a couple of interesting things that he mentioned. First of all, as it relates to Johnny Newton, he said that they didn't think he was going to make it to 36 and that they looked at moving up to get him. So they actually considered trading up. Now, can you imagine? Because in the moment on Friday night when they selected Johnny Newton, I know a lot of you were like, what? A defensive tackle? I'm fine with it. Let me just make sure that I'm clear on this. It's a rotational position, and right now you've got Allen and Payne, and I don't even need to think about what it means for John Allen. John Allen's going to be on the team this year, and then really, in terms of money owed to him, even though he's under contract in 2025, they could move on from him if they wanted to at essentially no cost, but you need more than just two. And I loved the fact in the moment that it was the best player available. I think that's the only way to conduct a draft, especially when you're a bad football team. But he mentioned they considered moving up with, you know, some of the angst over not taking a tackle there at 36, or at least not taking a position of perceived need. Can you imagine if you heard Washington has traded into the 34 spot, two spots, and they select Johnny Newton, defensive tackle? Some people would have lost it. How about the he got the commander tag? I'm all for whatever they decide to do out there. Don't get me wrong, but God, remember the Redskins grade? Remember when you'd hear that from Bruce Allen or from Vinny or from Dan? We gave him, he's got a very high Redskins grade from us. So then after a while, I was like, really? That's the kiss of death. Obviously, Sanra Still was a guy that they were hoping would be there. As it relates to Johnny Newton, I was really surprised when they picked him, but I was not displeased that they picked him because I knew what a good player he was, and I knew that he was a guy mocked in the first round. I actually thought Cooper DeJean, who, you know, Philadelphia traded into Washington's 40th overall spot. You know, Washington picked up 50-53 from Philly, so they traded within the division and allowed Philly to take the Iowa corner, Cooper DeJean. They had two corners, you know, one in the first round, one in the second round. But they clearly were hoping that Sanra Still would drop to that spot. The Sinnott thing, that's the one where I know some of the people that are really into the draft will say, most of the mocks had him going a little bit later. It's a matter of, you know, preference at that point, you know, whether it's him or the kid from TCU or the Ohio State kid. None of them are Brock Bowers in terms of projection. Definitely liked some of the things that he said about Luke McCaffrey. And then I think Brandon Coleman is the interesting one, you know. They drafted, you know, he emphasized the team captain thing. They've done that before. They've drafted, you know, some team captains, a majority of their draft. I think in 2011, there were a bunch of team captains. And I think, you know, one of Ron's drafts had some real emphasis on maturity and team captains. The most important thing is that they can play, obviously. And I think that's what I'm looking at here with Brandon Coleman. I don't know much about him, and I don't know how to project him. That's why I really was interested in hearing what Adam Peters said. They loved the fact that he had 1,600 snaps at tackle, but he also played a lot of guard, and he said, quote, "We see him as a tackle, and we think he could be a really good tackle. He's got heavy hands. He's a really good athlete. So we were really fortunate to get him where we got him." That is a key pick, right? Third round, No other offensive linemen. Tackles on the team that we're unsure of. We are unsure of. Maybe they aren't. But they wanted, we believe, to trade up into the first round to get an offensive lineman and couldn't do it. And so they ended up landing Brandon Coleman. Time will tell. All right. Rate us and review us if you get a chance on Apple and Spotify. Really does help us, especially this time of year. 5 stars if you see fit with a quick 1 to 2 sentence review on Apple. Subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Apple and Spotify as well. All right. Let's get to Nick Akridge right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, if you're looking for a fun way to play daily fantasy sports, Prize Picks is the place to go to. I downloaded the Prize Picks app recently. It's exciting, it's easy, it's different when it comes to DFS. It's just you against the numbers. It's not you battling thousands of other players. It's picking more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections with odds. Like the other night, I had Caitlin Clark less than 33 points and less than 6 3-pointers. It paid 3 to 1. The NBA playoffs are coming up. The NHL playoffs are coming up. Prize Picks offers so many different opportunities on a nightly basis. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use my code Sheehan for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app. Download it today. Use my code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy. Hey guys, I want to tell you about Harry's. Many of you have probably heard of Harry's razors and shaving products, maybe even from this podcast. They've been an occasional advertiser over the years. I'm a customer. I have been for a while now. I think it goes back to the first shipment of product that they sent me before the first time they advertised on the pod, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They found a way, Harry's did, to make a beautifully designed razor for a fraction of the price of other big brands. I've been using their Truman handle. It's a two-tone handle with a great grip. It provides a close shave no matter if you've got a beard and you're shaving around it, or if you cleanly shave on a daily basis. Their German-engineered blades stay sharp for a long period of time. They've got customizable delivery options for scheduled refills for as low as $2. That's half of what you pay other big brands. Right now, you can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, and this is a no-risk trial. If you don't like your shave, no worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options exist that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. That's harrys.com/SHEEHAN for a $3 trial set.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC, and you'll get a cash bonus on your initial deposit. They've got everything you need for the Kentucky Derby this coming weekend, and they've got all your NBA and NHL playoff lines as well. And if you're looking for NFL futures, my bookie's got them. How about this? They just updated their most valuable player for the regular season odds. Patrick Mahomes is the favorite, plus 590. Pretty much all you see are quarterbacks here. But Jaden Daniels is on the list, the second rookie on the MVP odds, listed behind, of course, Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams, plus 6,400. Jaden Daniels, plus 15,000 are the odds of him winning the MVP. But you get all that stuff on MyBookie. All of the futures opportunities with the NFL, all the sports you want to bet on, MyBookie's got everything, and it's fair. You know, you may have a site in which you're making sports bets, but you should have more than one. You should have a place where you can compare, you know, point spreads, totals, money lines, prop bet prices, pricing, all of those things. And why not make MyBookie either your primary spot or your backup spot, especially since they are giving you a cash bonus, free money, when you sign up using my promo code. Again, MyBookie.ag, promo code Kevin DC. All right, jumping on with us right now is Nick Ackridge. We've had Nick on the show many times. Nick is a senior data analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can follow Nick on X, on Twitter, at PFF underscore Nick Ackridge. Nick has responsibilities in evaluating the draft for PFF, and he gets very much involved in evaluating from a Pro Football Focus perspective, the Washington draft, because he's from here, lives here, and he is a big fan of the team. So let's go through the draft a little bit, Nick, and let's start with, because I haven't had you on probably since just after the Super Bowl when we started to talk about the quarterbacks. Where ultimately did you land on the six quarterbacks? We'll just take the six that were taken in the first round in terms of an order.
Yeah, I had Caleb 1A, Drake 1B, and then Jaden in a tier below them. I thought Caleb and Drake were kind of in a tier of their own. I was a massive Drake May fan. I thought that some of the concerns were, you know, a bit overblown. I think, yeah, the footwork can be a bit of a problem, and sure, there's definitely some accuracy issues. But even with all of that, he was one of two guys that had a 90 PFF grade in two seasons. That was him and Caleb. So he was producing despite all of that. You know, even with a terrible offensive line, very limited weapons. And that was only his second year as a starter. So I thought there was just tremendous, tremendous upside with Drake May and someone I saw as, you know, a potential top five, top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
So they didn't pick Drake May. They picked Jaden Daniels. Yep. So what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, so it's tough when you kind of have these talks on social media and whatnot. You know, people think that if you pick one, you can't like the other. But I was a Jaden Daniels fan as well. I had him with a top 10 grade. I was comfortable with them taking him at two. Obviously, I preferred May, but I did not dislike Daniels. I think there are some concerns in terms of, you know, how high that ceiling kind of goes. I think his floor is very high. I think, you know, the second he plays in the NFL, he's going to be one of the most dangerous, you know, dual threat quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he needs to just kind of work on, you know, taking the layups when they're there, and not trying to always look for that massive 30-yard run. We probably talked about pressure to sack ratio a million times, but that it's a definite concern. And so for me, it's just more kind of him looking to just throw the ball, get the ball out of your hands quicker, instead of always trying to look to take off to run.
Do you like the fit, based on whatever we know at this point, with Cliff Kingsbury?
Yeah, I think he matched up a bit better than May and even McCarthy to that point. I thought that the McCarthy talk was a bit weird because, you know, he was so good at Michigan with that under center heavy play action stuff where he's, you know, he's got the play action and then look right up and fire it right away into tight windows. And that's not really what Cliff does. He doesn't really have his quarterbacks under center. He does use pistol a lot, which is somewhat similar. But, you know, he loves to spread it out, and that's kind of what they did at LSU. Obviously, you know, you think of Kyler Murray with his time and with the Cardinals, and, you know, he's got – Jaden's got that sort of similar dual threat skill set. I think Jaden's a much faster and better athlete. But, yeah, I think it definitely fits with what Cliff did in the past. You know, just spreading it out five wide and just kind of, you know, spread it all over the field.
As long as we're talking about the quarterbacks, what did you think of Penix Jr. going 8 to Atlanta?
I thought that was insane. I was not huge on Penix. I thought there was a lot of accuracy concerns. He was one of the worst quarterbacks we had in terms of accuracy this past season. I think his wide receivers bail him out of a lot of poor throws. I think he's really good in terms of understanding where he needs to get with the ball. I think that Washington offense and that offensive coordinator is kind of a young and up and coming guy who does a really good job with that. But I just think that, you know, he's a basically 6-year guy now, 2 ACL injuries and struggled with accuracy. I just don't think that he was going to be someone that's going to, you know, become a top-tier guy in the NFL, and that's what you would look for if you're looking for someone in the top 10. So for me, I was kind of more comfortable with taking him in, you know, round 2.
I was actually a Penix guy, and I think you touched on probably the number one reason. I felt like he really processed quickly pre- and post-snap, and yeah, he had great offensive line. He had a great offensive line in front of him. He had 2 NFL receivers. He had a really big-time back before he got hurt. There was just something that made him, for me, in the pocket, look like the way he processed, the way he got it out, an NFL passer. But to me, I'm curious as to what you guys have had at PFF in terms of the conversation around what Atlanta did. We're going to get to the other draft choices, people, trust me. But I think we have come to a point where you have to have these quarterbacks evaluated somehow and have a very strong feeling about them before free agency, and it would appear as if Atlanta didn't.
Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of position that they've now put themselves in, because, you know, you've seen now that what's coming out is they kind of wanted to model the whole Green Bay thing in terms of, you know, when the Packers drafted Jordan Love in the 20s, I believe, to kind of succeed Aaron Rodgers there. But with the Penix one, it's strange considering, because you just signed Cousins. It's not like Cousins has been there for a while and you can kind of see him slowly declining and whatnot. You just gave him a 4-year deal with a large amount of money. And Penix isn't someone that's, you know, young and raw. He's the type of guy that I could see coming and play decently right away. He's not someone that's going to have to sit back and, you know, completely change everything he's learned. And by the time that Cousins' contract is done, Penix is going to be close to 30. So I just don't really understand that kind of combination there. But I'm not particularly against the idea of getting that quarterback to kind of learn and develop so you can have a nice clean transition in the future.
I guess my point is that if they had known in, you know, late February before free agency started that Michael Penix Jr. was their guy, they loved him, they felt like he was their future, they would have never signed Kirk Cousins to a $100 million deal, because there wouldn't have been any mock draft that would have indicated that Penix Jr. would have been gone by number 8. But what I've learned from reading various things over the weekend is that NFL teams kind of focus on free agency first. It's not that they haven't had scouts out scouting all of these players and that they don't have a draft board, but they don't get serious in the evaluation with the top people in the organization until really the combine. And at that point, you know, you're closing in on free agency and you've kind of already begun to make those decisions. I would think with a quarterback in the future, Atlanta just gave everybody a lesson. If you've got a need for a quarterback and it's between free agency and the draft, you better have your draft evaluations done long before free agency begins.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, because then you find yourself in this sort of situation where you bring in a veteran on a large deal and also a rookie in the in the top 10 pick. So they're kind of in between, you know, going for it all and leaning towards the future. So it's definitely a weird spot. I think you're 100% right that they have guys that are obviously looking at these quarterbacks throughout the entire season, but I just think that they – I don't know. I really don't know what they were thinking.
It's odd. It's just to hear them all of a sudden gushing over Michael Penix Jr., it's like, yeah, you could have figured that out a few months ago and saved yourself $100 million. I think it's one of the silliest things I think I've ever seen in all of my years of watching the draft. The Jordan Love thing's completely different. He was picked 26th overall or whatever it was, 24th, 26th. Aaron Rodgers was already a Packer for many years. They hadn't just gone out and signed him. By the way, he was coming off two, you know, very average years for him. All right, we move on. Back to Washington's draft. So Nick Ackridge with us from Pro Football Focus. He had Caleb and Drake May in that top tier category, and then Daniels below that category, but he's fine with Daniels. You and I are just opposite. I had Daniels as my 1A right behind Caleb, but I would have been fine with May. The one I would have never understood at 2 is McCarthy. I would have never understood that at 2. Do you feel the same way? You sort of implied that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like I said, I don't think what he did at college fits to what Cliff would be doing now in the NFL. I understand the kind of, you know, we get all the puff pieces about J.J. McCarthy, how he's a winner, everyone loves him, all these sorts of things that, you know, sometimes coaches and GMs kind of fall in love with. But outside of that, I didn't really understand it too much. You know, McCarthy's got some issues in terms of accuracy as well. I mean, when it comes to targeting throws outside the middle of the field, he was pretty rough. So I think that was just a weird kind of fit there. I think McCarthy's fit with the Vikings, I think, is perfect. I think he's got a great chance to succeed there, but with Washington, I didn't really see it.
All right. At 36 overall early in the second round, Washington took Johnny Newton, from Illinois. What did you think of the pick? What did you think of the player?
The player is incredible. I was able to kind of dive right into the tape the next day, and yeah, he stands out immediately. I'm not entirely sure how he slipped out of the first round. I think he just pops right away. You know, then the question kind of comes to, why do you need another defensive tackle when you've got Payne and Allen? But you know, for this roster, and I think we've seen it through free agency now, is they are trying to have a complete overhaul. And that doesn't necessarily mean you get rid of Allen and Payne, but you need to kind of raise the floor of where this entire roster is. And I think having a guy like Newton there to kind of sell Allen and Payne is a great, great thing. And you can get really unique with how you kind of set your defensive fronts up with the three of them. He played a lot of four technique and four eye technique, which means he's lining up over the tackle,
right,
instead of in between the tackle and guards. Like we've seen in the past with Allen and Payne here. So you can get a lot of creative three down, five down fronts with that. And when you get him on a one-on-one block against a guard, he's winning almost every single time. So he's just got really quick, fast hands. He's just powerful first step. And the only concern I really have with him is that he gives up a little bit too much ground when he tries to shed blocks. So you just kind of want to see him anchor a little bit better in terms of taking on blocks, taking on double teams, and obviously he will have a good couple of mentors there with Allen and Payne.
What do you think about him as an interior pass rusher? Like, as compared to, say, Allen and Payne, I would put Payne ahead of Allen in terms of just pure pass rush ability, but maybe you wouldn't. But how do you see Newton as a pass rusher and a disruptor on pass plays?
That's where he wins. That was kind of his go-to is in the pass rushing game. Again, Illinois kind of set it up so that he got a lot of one-on-one matchups with guards. And when that happened, he's winning, like I said, almost every single time. So he was extremely disruptive in the pass rushing game. And that's kind of what you're looking for with these interior defensive linemen, because interior pressure is just so valuable in terms of what it does to a quarterback. They don't really have anywhere to go if you win on the inside. So, his pass rushing ability is just probably one of his best skill sets.
What do you think the plan is with John Allen?
That is a very good question. I think we'll see a lot after how they kind of use the three of them this year. I don't really know at this point. I think Allen and Payne are such an interesting duo, because these past couple years with Del Rio's defense and Rivera's defense and whatnot, they had a lot of freedom to kind of do what they wanted. And it led to a lot of, you know, blown gaps and missed assignments and stuff like that. But it also led to a lot of, you know, massive plays. I don't think Dan Quinn's going to let them do that. I think we're going to really see how well they play within a structure, because both of them are probably two of the most talented defensive tackles in the entire NFL. So you want to see how well they can kind of play within this structure and then kind of go from there. So I think this first year is kind of a test to see how the two of them play, and now the three of them with Newton now in there as well.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll continue with Nick. We'll get his thoughts on the rest of the draft and maybe even some of the undrafted free agents. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey, guys, most of us are interested in our mental and physical well-being to a certain degree. And with that in mind, I'd like to welcome and introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. The new sponsor is Unified Healing. Unified spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, Healing. It doesn't matter if you're a big-time world-class athlete or just a somewhat athletic podcaster like me. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring the podcast now. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the DMV or anywhere else across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Well, go to unifiedhealing.com/Sheehan to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/Sheehan. No material or testimonies on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. If you've been thinking about new windows, I recommend Window Nation. Give them a chance to at least give you a free, no-obligation estimate. They'll come to your home. You'll find out during that estimate process which windows actually need to be replaced versus those that don't. And if you move forward with Window Nation, you'll get two free windows with every two you purchase, with no payments and 0% interest for two full years. Window Nation offers a lifetime warranty on their windows. They can be installed by a very experienced installation team in a day or less. With proven quality and service, when you buy from Window Nation, you can rest assured you're getting affordable windows that meet or beat the ones from the national brand names. Use my name when you call Window Nation at 866-90-NATION, or when you visit windownation.com. You'll get a free in-home, no-obligation quote. You can spend your time shopping that quote, deciding whether or not you want the windows. But if new windows are something you've been thinking about, I'd urge you to give Window Nation the first chance. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. We continue with Nick Ackridge, and we've gone through their first two picks, Jaden Daniels and Johnny Newton. And now it's time to get to the other two second-round picks in the rest of the draft. And Mike Sanrastil was a big-time player on Michigan's national championship team. What did you think of him?
I love this pick. I was mocking him here, you know, with their original second round pick. I think he filled a need in the secondary. I think he brings a kind of mindset that they obviously want. And he's just so much fun to watch. He's going to come up and hit every single thing he sees. And it's just really fun film to watch. He's someone that maybe he could get a little too aggressive in terms of the run game and off coverage, but he's a very, very smart football player, and he's also very new to the position. He played wide receiver for a couple years in Michigan before transitioning to corner these past 2 years, and right away was one of their best corners. So very raw, very, you know, explosive, very powerful, but still pretty raw.
What do you think of the cornerback situation? Like, he is clearly an inside corner, you know, at that size. Who are the starting outside corners week one right now?
Ooh, I mean, I would put St. Juice there, and I think St. Juice and Forbes as of right now. Forbes is such an interesting thing because, you know, first-round pick, but obviously it wasn't their first-round pick. So they might have a different kind of evaluation on them, and that first year was so rough that it's tough to kind of, you know, just give him the reins to, you know, start a cornerback position outside. But I think you definitely need to see what he can do. And I think Dan Quinn's defense will help him. It's kind of more suited for what he's good at in terms of, you know, being a ball hawking corner. We've seen it these past couple of years with the Cowboys defense that they have these corners that they might get burnt a lot, but they're going to make a lot of plays too. And I think that's something that Forbes can kind of thrive in. So I think the two of them, Forbes and St. Juice, would be outside. And like you said, Sanders still is definitely a slot guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, like, when you think of Bland and you think of Diggs in Dallas, you know, you think of ball-hawking guys. I mean, they're going to give up some plays, but they're going to create enough takeaways, hopefully. Of course, it helps when you've got Micah Parsons as a pass rusher as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this is part of what they're looking for. They're looking for guys like that. All right, what did you think about their third second-round pick, the tight end from Kansas State, Ben Sinnott?
Yeah, this is where you can kind of make the argument that maybe they started to reach a little bit. But for me, once you kind of get out of that top 60, top 70 picks, I think you're kind of really more looking for guys that you are a bit higher on than the rest of the draft. We've seen in years past with Rivera being way too overconfident in the first and second round and really reaching on players that you can get later. I don't think that's as big of a deal in like the third and later rounds. And for me, I didn't watch any of these tight ends before, but watching Sinnott afterwards, I understand why they would, you know, be happy with him. I think Peters probably saw Kittle and Juszczyk flashbacks right away with kind of his aggressiveness in terms of how he wants to block people. I think he needs to do a better job with consistency when he's blocking people, but he wants to just destroy you every single time. And he definitely has that kind of Kittle athleticism and mindset when it comes to that. So I think it's something that, you know, you're finally attacking this tight end position with a pick that is not, you know, in the fifth, sixth round, and you're not going for older veteran guys. And I think he's someone that could, you know, be very, you know, athletic and explosive at that tight end position.
I'm looking this up right now because I don't see the Kittle explosiveness, but that's, you know, comparing him to one of the best. And
yeah,
I'm trying to see what the difference in 40 time. So here it is right here. Sinnott ran basically 4.7 and Kittle basically ran 4.5. So there is a big difference. But a body type, you know, similar. Kittle's bigger, right? Kittle's got to be a little bit bigger, taller, I'm guessing.
Yeah. In terms of their athletic score, I know that, you know, Sinnott's athletic score was very, very high. And you can kind of see that with his burst.
Yeah.
Maybe not his long speed is not going to be the same as Kittle, but that kind of burst off the line is something that's pretty noticeable.
So
right
what
away.
So what do you make of Rass, you know, the relative athletic score? I talked about it in the open to the show today. What do you make of it? How do you use
it? I think it's really useful. I think it's really useful. I don't think it's something that you can sit here and only use in terms of what you kind of want to evaluate, but I think it's a much, much better it does a much better job of showing athleticism for some of these guys in terms of just, you know, the testing numbers. I think the combine testing is kind of slowly going away in terms of how important that is. Obviously, these numbers come from that, but I think that, you know, your typical 40-yard dash is not as important as something like, you know, your 10-yard splits and, right, and all that sort of stuff. But I think RAS right now is pretty useful in terms of what it can do with the data we're given. But I think, you know, in a couple years, we're really going to be relying on kind of the in-game technology that we have in terms of what we have with, you know, certain teams with the chips in their shoulder pads that we can kind of see the mile per hour that they get to on the field. PFF's been kind of working with that in the background, and we're working on some sort of stuff with that in terms of athletic score with it. And I think that's kind of the future in terms of what we're looking at for athletes. But anytime you can get more data on athletic testing, I think it's a good thing.
All right. So, so far, so good. And I think everybody, you know, as much as you can sort of look at the process, you can be optimistic and positive. But I want to ask you about offensive line. He admitted it. Adam Peters admitted that they wanted to trade back into the first round. I think we're all assuming it would have been for perhaps Mims or maybe Morgan, depending on where they were looking. And they didn't pull it off, whether it was them or the fact that there wasn't a team willing to do it for whatever the price they wanted to pay. They weren't able to get that offensive lineman in the latter portion of the first round. So they didn't take one in the second round, but they took one in the third round. Brandon Coleman from TCU played more guard at TCU. They project him to tackle. What do you guys at PFF see with Brandon Coleman?
Yeah, he's an interesting evaluation because his 2023 was significantly worse than his 2022 tape. And so I was kind of reading up on if, you know, maybe he had some sort of injuries, and there were some reports out that he might have had some nagging injuries, which would make sense when you're kind of watching the two films side by side. He looked a little bit less explosive in 2023. But the film still wasn't that bad. The grading was not great, you know, in terms of some of the overall numbers there. But I think that there was a lot to work with there. I think he's, you know, just naturally powerful. I think he's got really strong hands. If he can kind of get his grip or his grasp on you, it's pretty much over. And he's always kind of looking to finish blocks, which is something I love to see in offensive linemen. He's not just looking to block you for a couple seconds. He's looking to put you in the ground. So he has that natural power. I think he really needs to kind of clean up his technique in both the run game, but mostly in the pass game. I think he's a little too heavy with his hands. And he kind of stops his feet a little bit. So just kind of cleaning up those sort of technique things. And that's what you're kind of looking for when you're looking at offensive linemen in the third and fourth round is, you know, they're never going to be perfect, but you're just trying to look at if you can sort of fix some of these things to help them take that next step. And I think he has just a couple quick fixes that he needs, and I think he could be a pretty good tackle.
So what is your guess on what the plan is for the 2024 opener at left tackle? I think that I'm pretty sure that they are much higher on Andrew Wiley than maybe a lot of fans are. But I'm wondering what they think of Cornelius Lucas and whether or not they are okay with Lucas as a starter. There's not much more you can do in free agency at this point. Mekhi Becton goes to Philadelphia. What do you think the plan is?
Yeah, I think that is, to start off, it's Lucas at left and Wiley at right. I'm also someone that's a bit higher on Wiley than the fan base. I think that the quarterback play last year made the entire offensive line look a lot worse than, right, than what they actually were. I don't think Wiley is a fantastic tackle, but I think he's serviceable, and that's kind of what you're looking for. I think you definitely need an upgrade in the future there, but I think he's serviceable at this point. In terms of Lucas, every time he's come in to play, he's been fine. Again, someone that's just has done the job enough. And that was kind of the same with Leno. I think Leno got a bit of a rough go from the fans as well, but he just kind of did his job. He just happened to have his worst kind of reps in some big moments, which was a little bit unfortunate. But I think to start, they go with Lucas at left and Wiley at right. And then I think you kind of keep Lucas there until you think that this rookie Coleman is ready. And I think, again, he'll need a little bit of help with his technique, but I think he definitely has the measurables and the athleticism to play.
All right, Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah, Luke McCaffrey was – this was the first one that I was a little kind of, you know, iffy on, but I can see why they did it. Again, just a really freak athlete who's raw at the position. Played quarterback a couple of years before finally playing wide receiver, and you can kind of see that with how he plays the position. He's really good at just finding open zones and getting open, and he knows when he needs to help his quarterback in terms of how to get open on the scramble drill and coverages and stuff like that. So I think there's still a lot of rawness in terms of him being a receiver. He's got to get, you know, better at the top of his route, better with release packages, and that just kind of comes with playing a lot more wide receiver. They at Rice, they used him a lot in the slot, so you didn't see him too often go up against press coverage, but when he did, he struggled with it a little bit. But where he wins is contested catches. He comes down with nearly everything. He's got a ton of contested catches. Is not afraid to take hits over the middle of the field. He will usually come down with the ball. So you're just kind of banking on that athleticism and him still kind of learning the position, but also having that toughness and that IQ of, you know, knowing how to be open for your quarterback.
Of any of the three day 3 picks, McGee, Hampton, John Baptiste, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other on any of the three?
Yeah, I thought McGee was really unique. I kind of like that a lot because, again, really, really good athlete. I kind of hinted at some of our PFF athletic stuff that he's near the top of on those in terms of linebacker play. So he's the type of guy that will, if he's going to be wrong, he's going to be wrong at 110% effort. I tweeted out that he's kind of has the Frankie Louvu type of energy where he's going to come and run right through you every single snap. So he's just a really good athlete, and he has that type of energy, and that's kind of what you're looking for at the linebacker position. So I think it's good for him to play behind a Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner. It's tough not to get better when you're learning behind Bobby Wagner. So I think at the very worst, he's going to be a great special teams player because of that athleticism. And, you know, at the very best, you've got a starting linebacker.
Of the undrafted free agents, Sam Hartman got, you know, the most publicity because I think college football fans and maybe even just NFL fans are familiar with him. He was the quarterback at Notre Dame. He was at Wake Forest before that. But do any of the players on the list of undrafted free agents, were any of them players that really stuck out to you as they really nailed it here?
None really. I think, you know, I'm thinking of the safety, Tyler Owens, I think is one that kind of was someone that I saw could get drafted in the later round. So that was kind of one that I was a little intrigued with. Same with the corner from Colorado State.
Right.
Again, one that I thought could get drafted. So seeing them pay a premium for these type of players is kind of interesting. They were clearly pretty high on them. But for these guys, you're just kind of looking to see if they're going to make the roster that, again, it's going to be on special teams. It's going to be in a definite backup position. I don't see anybody here that could kind of compete right away, but I would love to be wrong.
All right, last question, and it's kind of a two-parter for Nick Akridge. So what didn't they do that you wished they did, and what did they do that you wish they hadn't?
I'll start with the quarterback. again, I was a Drake May guy. So for me, I wish they took Drake May, but I'm not completely, you know, against Jaden Daniels. I'm not going to sit here and think that he can't be successful in the NFL. I think he's got the skill set to do it. I just thought that Drake May could be one of the best out of this class by far. So I thought that was just kind of the one thing that I wish that they did, but they didn't. Other than that, maybe kind of looking at tackle, but I was kind of happy that they didn't trade up. I'm not a huge fan of trading up into the back end of the first round because you're going to pay a premium for that, and it usually hurts teams in the long run. So for me, I was kind of happy that they didn't trade back up. obviously it would have been nice if some of those tackles fell to them, but I was just kind of happy with how they played the board. Again, really, there was no trade-ups, and you're just kind of understanding the board, understanding how, you know, teams are going to draft, and we didn't see any of those picks like we saw with the Rivera era, like that would just have you kind of scratching your head, and it was very clear that they weren't going to be way too overconfident and way too aggressive in some of their evaluation, and just kind of played the board and let things fall where they did.
What do you think the biggest Rivera overconfident in their evaluation pick was? Jamin Davis,
Forbes, Mathis in the second round. I think all of basically the first and second round picks were rough. I think a lot of those guys were ones that you could have had later in the draft. You know, it's tough to kind of draft someone like Jamin Davis, and, you know, everyone's saying, you know, he's going to be a project at linebacker, super athletic, but he's going to be a project, and then you're just going to have him starting at Mike in the first year is going to be a tough sell. And then with Forbes, again, it's someone who's just tiny. He's an outlier at that position. He's someone that you're going to have to kind of live with that size being a problem, and you know, taking that early was rough when someone like Christian Gonzalez went a pick later. So those were obviously the obvious ones and kind of tough to swallow looking back on.
Yeah, Christian Darrisaw would have looked really good with this new regime had they just taken him instead of Jamin Davis. But we could do that for a lot of teams in a lot of drafts over the years. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well.
Yep. See ya.
Nick Ackridge, everybody, does a great job for Pro Football Focus, and he's a huge fan of the Washington squad. So it's always good to hear his perspective, the PFF perspective. So there you go. That is it for the day. Back tomorrow.